You didn't lose me, Paula. I was muted on my end. Sorry about that.
No, okay.
But yes, we were right at the time, and I didn't want to miss getting started on episode 93. Oh, my goodness. Some new folks have just joined us, and did you want to finish your topic, or do you want to
actually. Yeah, let me finish the topic. Let's see how much. I probably got a little bit to go. I can shorten a little bit, but wanted to. So those of you who didn't dial in for the pre-show, and this is free, guys. So you know, get on the insider list. Call in at 10 rather than 10:10, and we always talk about something really interesting to our coding, billing, compliance world. And so today we're really talking about sun damage. You know, skin damage due to the sun and sunburns. So as we discuss sunburns, and then I'm just going to finish up real quick, it can lead to heat stroke, which causes the body's failure to regulate body temperature and when exposed to excessively high temperatures. The Mayo Clinic indicates that heat stroke occurs when your body temperature rises above 104 or higher, and it requires emergency treatment. Untreated heat stroke can quickly damage your brain, heart, kidneys, and muscles, and it can actually lead to death. So now, of course, out west in places like Arizona, it's more prevalent than in the east. However, it can happen anywhere. I know in Georgia we've heard about it happening and, you know, patients passing away from it. So definitely something to be aware of. So to protect yourself against this, you need to stay hydrated. You know, every time I visit Arizona, they're always throwing water at you, which is, there's good for a reason for that, right? You should also wear loose-fitting clothes, lightweight clothing. Protect yourself against sunburn as you can. Don't sit or leave any living thing in a parked car, guys, and try to stay in during the hottest part of the day, as well as don't drink alcohol or monitor how much you drink and pay attention to how your body reacts to certain medicines. There are some medicines that make you more susceptible because they cause your body difficulty in trying to stay hydrated, or how they respond to the heat. And those are things like, you know, vasoconstrictors, blood pressure medications, beta blockers, diuretics, antidepressants, antipsychotics, stimulants for ADHD, as well as those illegal stimulants like cocaine and amphetamines, as well as some antibiotics. Now, to code for heat strokes, we're going to use that T67 code family. And let's see, and I'm not going to go ahead and talk through all the different heat stroke stuff, but it's just going to refer you to the T67 code family. And remember, as we talked about in the beginning, those with darker skin tones are more susceptible to the heat strokes caused from sunburn, because you can't see the skin tone changing to that pink like you would in a lighter skinned person. So stay hydrated, guys, and get out your sunscreen before you head out. So thank you. Pam, I'm going to turn it back over to you. So let's start with the questions, and let's see how far we can get today.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All righty. So we're going to put on our COVID hat, because Carrie had a question about that. She's an inpatient in a place that uses DRGs. And she wants to know when and which Z codes to put on the COVID-19 tests when those are done on an inpatient.
Okay, and that was Z as in zebra. So now the question was a little confusing. So Carrie, if you're listening today, we're going to answer this question. But if we're not answering it based on what you intended, please ask us another question and clarify. So, and this question was actually asked in a previous session of Coffee with a Coder. So the one that we're going to respond to, it's really the question was about, you know, how to assign the Z codes as principal diagnosis. So I'm going to repeat that answer. And Z codes are assigned the same as for outpatient as they are inpatient. So I'm going to go ahead and read to you that same answer that we gave previously. So let's define those codes and the ramifications on the DRG. Z as in zebra, 03818 is for encounter for observation for suspected exposure to other biologic agents ruled out. This is for cases where there is a concern about a possible exposure to COVID-19, but it's ruled out after evaluation. The principal, and this is for an inpatient acute short-term hospital, drives you to DRG 951, other factors influencing health status, which will be reimbursed around $4,273. That's the national average rate. Yours is going to be different based on your hospital specifics. VIN code Z20, that Z as in zebra, 20.828 is for contact with and suspected exposure to other viral communicable diseases. You're reporting this one for a patient who has had exposure or there's been suspected exposure. This DRG is also 951, the same as Z03818. And then Z11.59 is encounter for screening for other viral diseases. The guidelines state that for asymptomatic individuals who are being screened for COVID-19 and have no known exposure to the virus, and the test results are either unknown or negative, you're going to assign code Z as in zebra 11.59, which is defined as the encounter for screening for other viral diseases. Now, this is an unacceptable principal diagnosis, so it won't drive a DRG. It can't be used as a principal on an inpatient admission, right? So remember, anytime there is a positive test, you're going to code U07.1 and the manifestations, not one of the Z codes reported here. U07.1 drives you to DRG 177 to 179, depending on whether there's a presence on an MCC or a CC, and payments range from about $5,700 to about $11,300. Now, I expect many of these cases may even result in outliers due to extended lengths of stay as well. So there you go, Pam.
Thank you, thank you. All righty, now we're going to go to an inpatient rehab. And I'm going to have to open another piece of paper because my information just disappeared. So excuse me just 1 second while I find the question again.
You want me to go ahead and read the question, Pam?
Would you? I was trying to ask you the question from Barbara. She's an inpatient rehab, and I don't know why, but it just disappeared off my paper.
Okay. Well, I have it here on the screen. So Barbara says, what is the IRF impairment group code for this scenario? Patient had a distal femur periprosthetic fracture after falling. The impression says the patient and with interprosthetic left femoral component fracture, status post revision of distal femur, wound vac application, and partial weight bearing left lower limb. An x-ray revealed a left knee acute displaced angulated periprosthetic distal femoral metaphysis fracture. The patient was seen and evaluated by orthopedics and did undergo left revision total knee arthroplasty with distal femoral replacement. The IRF manual provides direction that if a joint replacement is due to fracture, to select the fracture IGC. I want to double check to verify this applies to periprosthetic fractures as well. So here you go, Barbara. Let's go back to the IRF-PI manual. So actually, for hip fractures, that is true. And I'm going to tell you kind of how we came to the answer on this case, okay? So the IRF-PI manual says, if hip replacement is secondary to hip fracture, code the hip fracture, 08.11 through 08.12. If hip replacement is secondary to arthritis, code as hip replacement 0851 to 52 and 0871 to 0872. Now, this scenario that we just read, the one in the question, does not indicate a hip fracture, rather a distal femur. So if for you guys who are new to coding or new to healthcare, you know, proximal is closer to the body, so that would be like in the hip on the femur, but distal is further away. So the distal femur identifies a revision of the total knee arthroplasty. That said, in researching, we quickly referenced a book that we wrote. It is called the IRF-PI resource manual, and we have spent a painstaking amount of hours on this book every year to update it. It's about 600 pages. Now, if you've not seen it, I'm going to give you a quick commercial and ask Pam to create a sample for download because it is definitely an awesome resource. It lists all the diagnosis codes in Appendix A with their descriptions and identifies diagnoses that cause failure of 60% and provides documentation helps for all diagnoses listed and identifies discrepancies in the CMS regulations related to ICD-10 and IGC selection. So if you're on today and you want this book, download the attachment to today's call, and you'll get a 30% discount off this year's version and a 20% discount off next year's book. But if you must order before July 3rd, 2020. And insiders, you guys, anybody in the insiders, you get 30% off next year as well. So if you want to be an insider, Pam's going to tell you how to do it at the end of today's call. So back to the question. So to answer, first, we looked up the code for periprosthetic fracture of the left distal femur. That code is M, as in Mary, 97.12XA. Now, then we refer over to Appendix A, which is in our IRFPI resource manual, and that code, M97.12XA, does not appear in Appendix A. However, the diagnosis codes for fracture of femur, tibia, or fibula following insertion of an orthopedic implant is referenced to IGC 08.516171. So we felt that by CMS grouping those fractures to replacement, it was logical to also use 0851 for this case. We'd actually put it there already in our book because we noticed this when we were writing the book and we were reviewing all the diagnosis code options. Now, 60% qualification will depend on if the patient is over 85 or has a BMI of 50 or more or has a qualifying comorbidity. But from our perspective, we would put it in 0851 because of other diagnosis codes that are also listed in that category, or like diagnosis codes, I should say, also listed in that category in the IRFPI manual. So there you go, Pam.
Thank you, thank you.
Find
I don't think
questions.
We have time for any more. Yes, I did. I don't know why it got lost, but it's back.
Okay.
Thank you,
well,
thank you.
You know,
I don't think we have
one,
time for the other one. Is it really short?
The next one's just kind of, yeah, it's really short. So go ahead and ask that question.
Okay,
let
me go ahead. Okay,
minute.
This one's anonymous. And we've got a rehab patient with postherpetic neuralgia, gait disorder, impaired ADL. The documentation says the patient has significant pain issues impacting functional ability for managing ADL. The etiologic diagnosis is postherpetic neuralgia. They've chosen an IGC of debility. Would the postherpetic neuralgia be the primary for UBO4 since it's the underlying condition causing the pain and the issues with the ADLs and the functional ability, which I guess is also referring to the gait? What would you say?
Yeah, I would say yes. If the postherpetic neuralgia is still a present diagnosis and it's clearly documented as the underlying reason for the pain and ADL issues, you would report it as the principal diagnosis as well as the etiologic. Remember, the etiologic can be resolved, but the principal diagnosis on the UB cannot. I would also just take an extra moment just to really review that case and make sure that it's not something that's going to go into a neuro IGC better than a debility IGC. So there you go. Thank you guys for your questions today, and please send in more questions. We love the questions, and call in early for Coffee with the Coder Insiders. And, Pam, I'm going to turn that over back over to you.
Absolutely. And when I listen to this before I post it, I'll get the details about that sale that you put up, and I'll have that available in just a little bit. And next, the last thing we do today is going to be mug somebody. So we have two non-anonymous questions, and what we're going to do is mail a mug to one of these people who ask. And let's see, I've got the names in little slips of paper where I can't see them, and I'm spinning them around. Okay, so the one who wins today is going to be Carrie. Carrie, I'm going to reach out to you and find out where to mail your mug. Thank you for your question. 2 weeks from today is going to be July 13th, and we're going to have episode 94. So excited that we're getting up to 94. We're going to do something fun when we get to 100. So I'll invite you to come on at 10 o'clock that next time for the insider portion, or also join us on social media. There's a private group for Coffee with the Coder on Facebook, and I'm not sure about LinkedIn, but anyway, reach out to us and get involved in those private groups, and you'll get extra bonus stuff like being able to replay the insider portion, share it with friends, and send your friends. We love having you with Coffee with the Coder, and we love your questions. So we hope to see you again really soon and on an event at aq-iq.com.